This is Vern Casper. Party Line was put on the air to give voice to problem solving in our community.
Talking local on WILO.
The Party Line Crew.
This is Party Line on WILO, at your side since 1960. This is your forum for public opinion and comment. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent the views of WILO management, employees, or sponsors. Now let's join Party Line on WILO.
I'm still not over "You Love a Rainy Night," but this is good too.
Well, I tried
good
to
music
find
selections.
I tried to find the one with Mary Chapin Carpenter. You're just a bug on the windshield, but we don't have that one uploaded yet.
You're not
yet.
Playing the Weather Girls, are you?
No,
I hate that song.
I know
song.
You hate that song, so I will do.
Everybody has a song, though, right?
Yeah,
or two.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Party Line on WILO and Boone's Best 102.7 Party Line. Thanks to our friends at TC Trailers. If you're not pulling a TC trailer, you're not pulling your weight. Ivy Tech Community College, changing lives. Big O Tires in Lebanon. Big deals. Save money now on 24/7 at WeLoveBigDeals.com. And Clinton Carroll, BooneCountyDailyNews.com, your free local online newspaper. The online telecast at HoosierlandTV.com. That's brought to you by 51 West Event Center, the Farmer's Bank, Shoop's Country Foods, Culligan Water of Boone and Clinton County, Dan Ginda Funeral Home, Solidarity Community Federal Credit Union, Sam I Am Carpet Cleaning, Big O Tires in Lebanon, Arborwood by Shoop's, Welty Exteriors, Newell Gas, Wesley Manor Retirement Community, Stone Alley Hardware and Industrial Supply, the Community Foundation serving Howard, Clinton, and Carroll counties, Simplify Family Dental, Tornado Roofing, Siding and Gutters, Witham Health Services, Ellis Jewelers, Marshan's Window Tinning, VFW Post 1110 in Frankfort, Copper Electric Services, LLC, Braden Business Systems, Avery Home Store, Lanen's Furniture and Mattress, Jerry's Body Shop, and Mann Chevrolet GMC in Delphi. Well, I don't know if Mel really has to give you the forecast because 100% chance of rain.
Yeah,
how's that?
For a week. I mean, come on. Give us a break. We might see a little glimmer of sunshine on Friday, but doubtful. And the temperatures are going to be on a roller coaster. We're going to be close to 80 again and then back down into the 50s. And it's just Indiana weather.
I had gotten my yard mowed the other day, and I thought yesterday I'd go out, but it was just too windy. I don't like to mow when it's that windy. And now whenever I do get a break, it's going to be so soggy. I don't know if I'll still be able to get it mowed.
I'm afraid to take the roller out because I think it's going to be so wet, the roller's going to leave ruts. So I'm just going to have to wait because I have a super highway of moles in my north yard.
Yeah.
They're trying to work their way. I mean, it literally looks like the California freeway system on my in my yard. And if you're not careful where you walk, you can fall
right
through
in.
It.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So. And then the dogs go out and try and dig them up. So then the highway becomes an open highway at my house, and then you'd fall in a rut in the yard. It's just a mess.
I don't have to worry about that because Willie does not exert that much energy if he doesn't have to. So he kind of quit doing that. But anyway, it's rain. Let's just face it.
There we go.
Yep.
We do have a special guest in studio today. We welcome Ethan Buck, assistant, if I can say that, vice president of commercial ag lending with our friends at First Farmers Bank. How are you today?
I'm doing great. A little wet this morning.
Isn't this something? Now, you came in from kind of Tippecanoe County area. Were the roads anything bad there? Did you have to watch out for anything?
I'm going to knock on wood. It was,
thank goodness,
it was as beautiful as it could be.
Coming in.
We'll see how it is going home.
So this rain, I mean, Melissa and I have talked about it. They talked about it when Ag Day was on, and you guys were gracious enough to help us present Ag Day to our friends out there. We need this rain still, don't we?
Yeah. We're still down on soil moisture from last year. So all of this precipitation that we get during April is going to be welcome. If we could just get some steady rains here, we will take it.
You said the key word, though, right? Steady.
Steady.
Yes. I mean, the deluge, it just, the ground's so hard on top, and then it kind of runs off. And so we really need it, kind of like we've been getting it, though. So hopefully this does help.
Yep.
Well, let's go back a little bit, because you've actually been here before, but it's been a minute. Look, she's giggling already. Are you going to play that?
I have it.
I knew it. Oh, my gosh. You have been here before, because you're a local. You were in a local FFA chapter. Mm-hmm. Talk about that just a little bit. And tell us a little bit about your background, because one thing I love about ag lending in general is you have a background in agriculture. And I think people need to know that, because you don't want somebody just working with you that has no idea what you're talking about. So talk a little bit about how you know this community, and then really how you started doing what you're doing now.
Yep, we'll back it all the way up. I grew up on my family's fourth generation now, hog and row crop operation there in the Buck Creek, Indiana area. Mm-hmm. No relation to the last name. But so growing up.
Oh, you should have taken that. Yes, this is my area.
Yeah, no kidding.
I won't bore you with all the details, but fun fact, Buck Creek was named after an albino buck that was running the creek in that
really?
Time. And
yeah.
My family moved in shortly after. So anyways, grew up in the Buck Creek area. My first memories were AIing sows with mom and dad, riding in the planter and the tractor with grandma and grandpa. So agriculture was in my blood. Grew up 4-H and FFA, was a attendee of Rossville Schools, had Dale Griffin as an advisor, so very blessed for that opportunity. Went on to Purdue University to study agribusiness, and I kind of met a fork in the road at that time. It was, do you want to stay in production agriculture, or do you want to pursue a career? I said, I don't have to choose either or, let's choose both. So, I chose a career in ag lending. First Farmers Bank and Trust went out a limb on me and took me in from college. And I also row crop with my family. So my wife and I are coming into our third crop year, and we will be row cropping 224 acres this year.
Well, see, that's just it, though, right? I'm glad you chose that path of both, because, again, that's where the knowledge comes from. And how do you help others with the knowledge that they need, because you need that knowledge as well. So good choice on your part.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, and the other side of that, too, is he's still involved in FFA because he has no choice.
I am guilty by association now. My wife, Lindsay Buck, she is the high school FFA advisor at Rossville, our alma mater.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So
this has really come full circle for you guys.
It has. It has. We've been very blessed the last few years.
Yeah, Griffin retired, and she took over. So
yeah, there was a few years in between, but
yeah, but not much.
Not many.
Yeah, and working with Jesse up there. So,
you know, First Farmers Bank and Trust. When you're thinking about that, you were talking about you went to Purdue, and were you thinking, you know, maybe ag lending, or did it just happen?
I'm going to be completely honest. My concentration at Purdue was in commodity marketing. I thought I was going to be at a trading desk or be a grain originator for a local elevator. But through different experiences and internship opportunities I had at Purdue, I found that if I wanted to pursue my goal of being on the farm and having an off-farm career, ag lending fit my interests and fit my availability better than originating grain or selling grain. So that's where I ended up. I interned with Farm Credit Mid-America, but I was continuously in talks with First Farmers throughout my time at Purdue, and we finally got on the same page when I was about ready to graduate.
They didn't want to let you go.
They did not.
Smart, right?
But all the knowledge, everything that you gained at Purdue through, you know, marketing and commodities knowledge, I mean, that has to be a fantastic asset for you for what you're doing now, and an advisory position for your clients as well.
Absolutely. We live in a time and space where marketing is becoming a bigger and bigger portion of the success story of farms. I like to call it, you got to get cute with it a little bit. You can't just spot grain sales over the scale at harvest. You've got to work with an originator. You've got to have a marketing strategy in place to maximize gains, especially when margins are tight. So implementing that knowledge I gained at Purdue, both on my personal farm, on Buck family farms, as well as working through what our customers are looking at for grain marketing strategies.
Well, delve into that a little bit for the person that's listening that maybe isn't. I mean, we do have a lot of farmers and people in agriculture, not just farmers, but that are in agriculture. But delve into that for maybe somebody who isn't as familiar with agriculture. What all does that mean?
Yeah, so what we grow is a commodity. It's a commodity-based business. And if I want to sell my commodity, there's only a few delivery points throughout, you know, our local area. We live in a garden spot, I would say, of delivery points. But the delivery point is what is going to be giving you the cash for your inventory. You need to work with your delivery points, and you need to work with the futures market to establish prices for your grain, for your commodities, to lock in profitability for what you're growing. You know, we're not doing this for free. I don't want to ride in the tractor for free. So I am working with both our farm operation, figuring out how much we're going to produce, what our bushels will be, working with our local grain originator saying, hey, I want to sell X amount at X price at X time. And that works into a grand overall strategy of profitability.
I think there are some people that maybe drive by a field and see these big pieces of equipment. There's a big combine. You got a $1 million combine. Mm-hmm. We've got those nowadays.
Yeah.
You got a big combine out there. You got these big tractors out there, and they think farmers are rich. They're loaded. You talk to the farmers, and they're like, we're struggling. Can you explain to folks the divide there?
Yeah, absolutely. Farming is a very capital-intense industry. You have to have a large amount of capital to enter the industry. For example, farm ground, $15,000 to $18,000 an acre in our area. It doesn't take too many acres to become a multimillionaire on paper, but all of that capital is locked up. You can't make payments off of equity. You have to make payments off of cash flow. So between your $1 million pieces of equipment, your multimillion dollar worth on the farm ground, that's not making my cash flow. I have to actually make money selling crops and pay myself and pay for my inputs and pay for my employees. And that's the part that's the problem here, is the margins on the commodity markets have been depressed the last, I'm going to call it, 3 years. We were in a 3-year liquidity crunch. High input prices, low commodity prices, it puts the farmer in a liquidity crunch where they are draining their working capital, the money that they have set aside to operate off of. So that is one of the frustrations that farmers have, is say, hey, I am touching lots of money, but I'm not keeping enough of it.
Is it possible in this day and age to just become a farmer?
It is, but it's very hard.
And what would someone need to do that? Because let's be honest here, a lot of people who are in the farm industry and are actively farming right now, a lot of that land has been generational. You know, it came from one generation down to the next, down to the next. And it's pretty tough to get into it now.
Mm-hmm.
How can folks do that?
There's a statistic out there from the American Farmland Trust that about $1.5 trillion of farm assets are going to change hands within the next 15 to 20 years. And some of those assets, they don't have any heirs. They don't have any person to give it to immediately. And I would say that would be the best way to get into farming if you're coming from an off-farm career, is find someone who is willing to take a chance on someone who wants to get into agriculture but doesn't have anyone to leave it to. If you want to do it the long and hard road of being self-made, you're going to have some pretty stout off-farm income to build up the capital requirement to engage in farming. So either finding some ground that you can purchase and homestead off of and build your operation, or if you can find some cash-rented acres, and then you have the whole next problem of getting access to the equipment. So really,
you about have to be a millionaire if you want to get in.
That's about right.
Wow.
If you want to do it at scale.
Right.
Obviously, there's niche farms that are making it, and there's honestly a big market for niche homestead farms and produce and vegetable farms and small hobby farms. And that's a good way to get your foot in the door. But if you want to start running 2,000 acres, you're going to need a lot of capital.
Oof.
Yeah. I mean, I know guys that are farming, like you said, niche farms, maybe still farming row crop, mm-hmm. but they're only farming, you know, maybe 100 acres. And they're doing it all with antique machinery because you know, they're not going to put all that money into high dollar machinery when they're not farming a ton of acreage.
But that's where your ag lender comes into this, right? I mean, it takes somebody like you to help work with somebody to guide the process. And I think having people work together, do you think that farmers, it's hard to work together because they don't want to know what everybody's got in their bank account, right? And so is that something that if we could maybe get over that, over the, you know, hump of what do you have, what do I have, do you think there's a possibility where we could see people starting to work together and share equipment costs and things like that?
Collaboration has been the buzzword in the last, I'm going to call it 6 months. There are some operations that have been collaborating with each other for years, and it's been great because they're able to share equipment cost. If you work with family, you're collaborating. For example, Buck Farms, there's three families involved, and we are collaborating to farm more acreage with less equipment to spread that cost. That collaboration idea can extend past the family, and it really should.
To neighbors, yeah. And people that are friends and in the same industry together.
Yes. So
why do we hold on to that, not wanting to do that so much?
It's the part that farmers are very independent spirits,
mm-hmm.
And it is tough to approach someone saying, I want to collaborate, and B, setting the ground rules is an immense task, right? I mean, if you approach your neighbor and say, hey, I want to split a planter, I want to share a planter, well, who decides who plants first? You've got to sit down and hash that out with your with the members of the collaboration and figure out what's fair, what's equitable, and it takes a lot of work.
I bet. It would have to take a lot of give and take.
Yeah, there's a lot of structure that goes into this. It's very an involved process that takes, obviously, someone to collaborate with. It takes your lender. It takes your lawyer to structure this to make it to where this thing's going to work.
What is the average age of a farmer right now? Because I still know a lot of people that are a little bit older that still want to kind of dabble, and they maybe not ride the tractor or the combine as much anymore, but they still want to be in. But I actually know a lot of young folks that want to have some hand in agriculture. And whether that's being in the field, maybe it's being somebody that's working on grain bins or whatever,
yeah.
I still see a lot of young people that have an interest.
Yeah, I'm going to give you two answers. The USDA, who tracks Schedule F farms and farm income, they say that the average age is, 60 plus. But I wouldn't say that's the true answer. There's a lot of folks who are filing farm income that they're retiring or they have retired, and they're either sharecropping, they're landlords, et cetera. So I would say the actual people that are on the farm operating, I would say there's a lot more young guys than you're actually led to believe.
Yeah, 30s, 40s.
Oh, I think even younger.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking, about Quincy and his friends, and the Quincy's, he's just mm-hmm. 25, so he's about your age as well. And there's a lot of them that have some hand in it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And so. Yeah.
So the future's not as bleak as we paint it. It's just trying to open the gateway to get young folks in and established.
Ethan Buck is the Assistant Vice President of Commercial Ag Lending for First Farmers Bank and Trust. He's our guest on Party Line today. One of the things we talked about on Ag Day, and this seems to be a huge issue, is dealing with policies. What's happening in Washington? How is that trickling down? Touch on that a little bit as well. I don't know if you can touch on a little bit. It's kind of a lot of bit, but go for it.
there's a lot to unpack there. I would say as a general overview, the policy environment has been extremely hard to navigate for farms, especially from a cash flow projection standpoint. Looking at the ad hoc aid that we've been receiving the last few years, trying to pencil in, are we going to continue to receive these payments? Does it pencil out for me to continue to do XYZ crop rotation, XYZ practice? It could if I get a government payment. It couldn't if it doesn't. So that has been a big frustration, is where do I project this income coming from? for 2025 crop, about a third of the income that an average farm would receive would be government aid or government subsidy. So that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That is just up in the air of whether it's going to come or not.
And there are some folks not in agriculture that say, why do they get aid? I mean, let them either stand on their own or not make it.
Yeah. Well, this has been a pretty consistent policy throughout any administration that we want to have access to food. We want to have access to affordable food. And the way to make that happen is to make sure your local farm doesn't go out of business.
How are we doing in compared to China, Brazil, some of those other places that grow a lot of grain as well?
I would say our market's fundamentally different. Our cost structures are fundamentally different than, I'm going to use Brazil as an example. A large majority of our cost structure in the United States comes from our fixed cost, our land, our equipment, the capital portion of farming. It's the flip side. In South America, a large portion of their expenses come from the inputs. It's very expensive to borrow money in Brazil. You're talking double digit interest rates, 15 to 25%. You mm-hmm. cannot get crop insurance. And if you can, it's basically because you don't need it. And getting synthetic fertilizers shipped in and transported across the country is challenging because they don't have as good of an infrastructure as the United States does. So it's just different. The South America especially, they're still adding acres. The United States, we're not adding crop acres. Most of the time we say we're stagnant or going the other way. So it's been interesting to compete on a global scale with a continent who is expanding their agricultural output so aggressively.
And here we are competing with folks that we actually taught how to grow products.
Yeah.
And now we're competing against them.
Yeah.
So, it's a good thing, good and bad, right?
Right. Right. There's obviously global need and global demand for that product. But it's interesting to navigate as a North American grower versus a South American grower because we have different challenges, but we're still growing the same commodity for often the same prices.
Yeah, the American farmer, we continue to produce more on less. And I don't know another industry that can really say we keep producing more on less like the farmer does.
It's been amazing what technology has done for the agricultural industry. A lot of it I would accredit to developments in genetics and hybrids, also cropping practices and technological implementation on our farm machinery. So precision agriculture and genetic hybrids are going to be what continues to push us doing more with less.
Absolutely. Again, Ethan Buck, Assistant Vice President, Commercial Ag Lender for First Farmers Bank and Trust, is our guest on Party Line today. And you mentioned in their crop insurance. And I know when some folks are trying to decide, I've got to cut something, what's it going to be? Sometimes we talk about crop insurance. What's your thought on that?
Well, out of all the line item expenses that a farmer has for 2026, the one line item that 100% got cheaper was crop insurance. And that is thankful to the One Big Beautiful Bill. The One Big Beautiful Bill subsidized crop insurance more heavily and actually reduced the premiums for like products coming into 2026. So that gives the farmer the choice of, do I save a little bit of money or do I buy up to the next coverage level? And I would encourage many farmers who haven't delved into the changes from crop insurance to do so. A lot of the deadlines have passed already for 2026, but this is the letter of the law now. You need to look in to see how the crop insurance decision has changed and if you need to make changes for 2027 moving forward.
Yeah, there's so many things to, because one thing about agriculture, people in a regular business, you can control what's coming in, you can control what's going on, you can control your production, but maybe they don't have to deal with the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the key thing with farming, is that we are, really have to be in bed with Mother Nature.
Yep. You can do all the things right. And if Mother Nature turns off the spigot or there's a random frost that comes through, or if there's a derecho that comes down and blows down the crop, what do? You fall back on your risk management strategy, and hopefully that involves some crop insurance, hopefully involves some self-insurance. That way you can stay in the game.
We're looking ahead, and I hate to say this, I know we're running close on time, and we can, if you don't have mind, we might keep you over a little bit here. But what are we looking ahead to? Because, you know, that's the other thing with agriculture. Boy, if we had a magic ball, right? Excuse me, and we could look into that magic ball and predict, maybe let's start with the next 5 years, and then let's look to 10 years. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I would say I'm going to start with this year and work forward.
I like that.
We're coming into another year of a liquidity crunch. Thankfully, there's been some more volatility introduced into the grain markets. I'll be at behest of pending war in the Middle East, but that has influenced some pricing opportunities for the farmer to actually make some money, to pencil in some profit for 2026. Moving, 5 years down the road, does this volatility remain in the grain markets? Do farmers have the opportunity to rebuild some of the working capital that they've burnt through the last 3 years? The old adage is the high times are never long enough and the low times are always too long.
Mm-hmm.
So folks are going to have to be very intentional about rebuilding their working capital and strategizing for the next 5 to 10 years down the road. At 5 years down the road, I foresee there's going to be a lot of transition. Again, there's going to be older farmers who are saying, hey, these last few years have just been a bear. I'd love to transition this to someone who has new ideas, who has new plans, who has maybe some ideas that I haven't thought of or haven't been willing to implement just because I want to retire. So that could be potentially good for folks that want to get into agriculture. But, 10 years down the road, I foresee more of a divergence in farm size, probably more consolidation in the farm industry as folks retire or folks phase out of farming. Bigger farmers may get bigger and smaller farmers may get smaller or more specialized. They might choose to become niche. They might choose to focus on some niche markets that way that they can capitalize on that. If they can't compete with growing number two yellow dent corn, well, let's do sweet corn. Let's do vegetable production. Let's do small livestock. And that can be really a good market to get into if you have the demand.
Now, I'm going to throw you back here a little bit because I remember my grandpa was born in 1916, and I remember him talking about sitting on a horse and plow, and that's how he first started with his dad clear back in the day. Now, you have known a lot of technology in the time that you have been doing what you're doing because you started out a little later. But how is technology playing a part in how we're progressing in agriculture? Because now we can get hooked up to a satellite somewhere. We went on Ag Day, and of course, Adam Shanks, we have drones. Mm-hmm. I mean, whoever thought that we could send a drone out to spray a field, right? So how do you see agriculture has changed in even just the time that you've been really active? I know for you, you grew up in it, so it is a little different than maybe somebody that just came and started working on a farm. But even then, it's changed dramatically.
Yeah, I would say that the technological advances we've seen in agriculture has kind of been a culmination of two things. It is trying to solve the manpower issue. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot less manpower or horsepower to farm more acres, right? I mean, I don't need to have a whole barn full of horses to go farm 2,000 acres. I have a few tractors, and we have two or three guys to run those tractors. And that leads into the other issue, the other item of efficiency. We've become more efficient because our labor usage has decreased exponentially. We've even seen that on our farm. We're running a small but mighty crew. We're all family owned and operated, and we're able to do that because we've invested in technologies that allow us to be more efficient with our own time and farm acres that we otherwise couldn't if we didn't have technology.
does your family like what you do now? I'm sitting here thinking, well, they probably love it in some ways. And then in other ways, I'm picturing you in the family meeting and you're all sitting around the table and Ethan says something and they all roll their eyes like, well, there's the money guy again from the bank. So do they look at you as a blessing? I mean, they would have to. You have a little bit of insight that maybe could help guide your family as well.
I would say at some points, my mother and father want to shoot me for all the ideas and all the items I bring up. But other times they're very blessed and very fortunate to have a son who is in both sides of agriculture here, and I'm very blessed to have them. I mean, they've done wonders for me, and they've opened the door to having another generation on the farm. So very blessed.
Yeah, there's definitely something to say for farming, because those of us that grew up on a farm, we don't go far, do we?
Sometimes we don't. You know, all roads lead back home, right? And that's kind of what I did for soul searching at Purdue, was I did internships and went different places. And there's always this feeling in the back of my mind. I said, I love home. I want to be home. And I want to engage in the noble action of farming and growing the food and fiber that feeds and clothes our country.
Well, and I'll be totally honest, that answer that he gave, his dad would have given the same answer about 10 years ago. So.
Well, no, I get it. I moved away. I was one of those, I got to get out of this county. I need a break, you know, whatever. And I moved away. I lived in Knoxville, Tennessee for a while. I lived actually in Chicago, Illinois for a while. I mean, so I went to two totally separate areas. And in Knoxville, they called me a Yankee. They're like, you're a Yankee. I'm like, I'm from Indiana. There's corn all the way around my house. And then to Chicago, whew, they didn't know what to make of me there. But you end up coming back. You find out that the folks here are really good folks, and we are very lucky. So that was a lesson learned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stick around here. Anything else you would like to share with us today? Tell us a little bit about what First Farmers Bank and Trust can offer folks as well.
Well, I would say it's in the name. We're a farm bank by heart, and we are committed to going through the ups and downs of agriculture. I know, hearkening back to the liquidity issue, there are some folks who are struggling to get access to the capital needed to put out some crop, or they're needing to term out some losses, operating losses from the last few years, and they're looking for a partner that will work through them with this current downturn. We are very knowledgeable in all spaces of ag. Our crew is both versed in the row crop and the protein markets, as well as niche markets and anything in between. So we really pride ourselves on being a partner with the farmer and working with them. That way they can continue to feed and clothe the world.
Do what they love.
That's right. That's right.
I that's one thing. I've never talked to a farmer that says, I hate my job. I mean, they do it because they love it.
Right. Right. There's always stress there, right?
Absolutely. And, yes. I'm not saying there's not. I mean, there's going to be stress in anything, and right. They go through a lot.
Right. And I will say this. Having a good banker can mitigate some of that stress. I mean, having someone that can actually sit there, know your operation, and know your numbers with you and work with you through some challenges, that can take a lot of stress off of somebody.
Yeah, I believe that. How can they get a hold of you, Ethan, if they have questions or comments or whatever? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. My office number is 765-395-3316, extension 1920. I work primarily out of our Rushaville branch, but I do a lot of driving, so I am willing to meet anyone, anywhere, and just go over what their situation is and what we could potentially do for them.
That's nice to hear that. You know, I just said the other day, how come doctors don't make house calls anymore? Don't you wish they could, or a vet still make a house call? And here you're saying, I'll meet you anywhere.
Oh, I love getting out of the office. Yeah, absolutely. I love going on the farm and just seeing what makes them fired up, right? I mean, tell me about what you do, and I'll sit there for an hour listening and just enjoying it.
Yeah, well, you kind of have to know that, though, really. Yeah. I mean, A, we enjoy it, but in the same token, you know, to get somebody in your corner, you kind of got to know where they're at. And so that's good advice right there. First Farmers Bank and Trust, Ethan Buck, Assistant Vice President, Commercial Ag Lending. Again, if you have questions, you can contact him. He is in Rushaville, but he goes wherever, 395-3316, extension 1920. Thank you so much for coming over today and spending some time with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, good to have you. You're listening to Party Line on WILO and Boone's Best at 102.7.
Yeah, we're going to take it out. with a little throwback.
Well, hi, I'm Ethan Buck, and I am the District 5 FFA treasurer, and I'll be going down Thursday of conference, and basically I'll just be sitting through the general sessions of the conference, and I'll also be going through the job fair and the college fair and getting to meet new people and getting to see new opportunities in my future career. So really, it's pretty a crazy experience. You get to see so many people and just so many different aspects of what careers in agriculture there are and what they offer. A lot of colleges, whether they be agriculture or not, they're there to kind of recruit kids for their college because they know the FFA members are the best of the best. They want them in their colleges. You also have a lot of the Fortune 500 companies, whether they be agriculture or not, there because, again, they know that ag and FFA kids are the best of the best, and they want our kids to step in the door of their companies and to kind of recruit them right out of high school or out of college.
So now, is there anything in particular that you're kind of looking towards or maybe a school that you're interested in talking to when you go?
I'm really hoping that Grace College is there. I did a college visit with them actually last week, and I'm very interested in their agribusiness program. But, you know, I live right outside of Purdue, so, you know, Purdue's always been a strong contender, so I'm really looking forward to see them there and really talk about their